Hey, listeners, welcome to another episode of Adventures in Parenting. I'm Jessie.
And I'm Erin.
We're librarians.
We're busy moms.
And we love podcasts. Today, we're in Studio E at the Patchogue Medford Library with our guest, Brian Schwartz, head of the Patchogue Medford Library's Public Services Department and avid gamer. Welcome back, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me back again. I'm very excited to be here.
If you listened to Brian's last episode on board games, you already know that he is our resident gaming expert. So we're excited to have him back with us to talk about video games, the good, the bad, and the fun. If you haven't listened to Brian's previous episode, we definitely recommend checking that out. So we know you're a big fan of board games. So what is your experience with video games in your personal and professional life?
So should I start at the beginning?
Sure.
Start at the beginning.
So when I was a kid, this is going to make me age slightly. I had a Commodore 64, and it was a very old computer that could play games, and the games would take hours and hours to load, and the graphics were like Atari-style graphics.
So even I did have that. Looking. Is that with the floppy disk?
It actually had a cassette drive. You would put a game, it looked like a cassette tape, and it would actually load the game onto the computer, but it would take 2 or 3 hours. There's a game called Jumpman I used to play, and it was hours and hours just to load it.
Wow.
But then I got a Nintendo when I was about 5, and I've been playing video games ever since. I did fall off the video game train for a while. I was kind of into the board games, but I got back into it, and I'm actually pretty up to date with systems. I have a PS5 and I have a Nintendo Switch. I keep up with the video game world, perhaps as much as the board game world.
What do you like better, the PS5 or the Switch, or are they completely different experiences?
Totally different.
I hate to say this, the Switch, and we can get into this more, it's very family friendly, but mm-hmm. in terms of like the capacity and the ability to like play the games, the PS5 just blows it out of the water.
Yeah, it's like the Disney of video gaming. Very cutesy, non-threatening. Even like the scary games are really not.
So if you're
scary.
Trying to dip your toe into video gaming as a family, maybe your kid has been bugging you about a video gaming system, you would want to start with the Switch.
Yeah, I think Switch is a family-friendly place to start. I'm not sure what appeal it has for adults or serious gamers. I was a huge Nintendo kid, so I still find it entertaining and in this nostalgic way, but it's not
right.
Like he said, it's
not for the pros.
It can't compete. Yeah, no.
What's the other one? Xbox? That's still a thing?
Xbox is, it's still around. I hate to say it. I don't really buy a lot of those games for the library because I feel like there's not as many coming out, and I haven't gotten any like demand for Xbox, but the Switch and the PS5 seem to be leading the industry.
What do patrons ask for the most?
Generally, I think Switch is the most popular because I think most people have it. It's also the most affordable. If you had to choose a system, I would definitely choose a Switch if you're a family, if you have younger children, because the games are much better for multiplayer. PS5, I know other libraries do own them for the kids to play, but I haven't considered buying one because most of the time you could play like 2 or 3, but Switch, a lot of the games are just made for a lot of people.
So I would assume that buying games, video games for the library would be kind of similar to a family or parents looking to buy games for their kids. So obviously they want to know what the reviews are and what the ratings mean. So can you kind of clue us in some of that stuff?
So the video games have ratings on them. They're rated based on the age group that they're geared towards. So E for everyone is going to be good for any age. Then there's T for teen, which is for, I guess, anyone who's in the teenage range. And then there's M for mature, which are the ones that have more mature content, such as blood, violence. The best thing about the video game rating system is that they have what's inside the game, what kind of problem areas you might have. It might say suggested violence or blood or alcohol, and they'll give you what kind of content you'll see in the game.
I feel like with all things, the trickiest rating is probably teen. Because like, think about it, even here, our teen department is 6th to 12th grade. So 13 and 17 are completely different developmentally. So I feel like that's probably the hardest one to choose.
Well, I buy games for the library. I've been doing it for probably about 18, 19 years. And I've been buying the teen games for like for the Carnegie specifically. I buy only the T for teen and below. Mm-hmm. And for the main building, I buy all the different types. And they're all shelved together along with some children's games too. So as a parent coming in, I would suggest if you're looking with your teen or your child, look at the rating before you let them take a game home because it's not always apparent what the subject matter is going
to
be.
And then where could, if a parent wants to buy something, where can they get like good reviews?
So I generally like to go to Metacritic and I like to see they have a composite of different websites and what the reviews are, and they'll have an average score, but you can go into individual ones. I like IGN, GameSpot, but there's a lot of other ones out there. And generally when I purchase a game for myself or for the library, I like to look at the game and see how the reviews are. Sometimes games are just universally going to be popular, even if they have bad reviews, but I generally try to look at the reviews before I purchase a game.
Listeners, Brian mentioned earlier before we were on mic that the Bluey video game got bad reviews. And that's heartbreaking to me.
I don't remember why, but it got a pretty bad review, unfortunately.
Sheesh. They probably just rushed it. the Bluey did game? It come out? Yeah, did it come out at the height of Bluey?
I think it just mania? Came out recently. I don't know why it would get bad reviews. I mean, everything about Bluey is so wonderful.
I don't know. Brian, did you ever see that documentary about the E.T. game for Atari?
Oh, yes. The one that got in the
That's it. When you said the Bluey game got really bad reviews, it reminded me of, I don't recall the name of the documentary, but it was about this E.T. game that they made for, it was Atari, right?
It was Atari.
Yeah. And it's like the worst game in history. But it was, they were rushing to put it out to capitalize on the fame of the film. Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe Bluey suffered the same fate.
Well, I was going to mention that this is a pro tip for parents out there. Generally, as a rule of thumb, any game based on intellectual property and IP is bad. Usually, if there's a movie and a game that's based on it, 9 out of 10 times they're bad games.
Why?
I think because they're trying to capitalize on the appeal of the movie and they don't actually think through the gameplay itself. I could probably name a lot of examples of games based on movies that are just not good.
Hmm. You can also think of movies based on games that are pretty horrible.
Yeah, true.
It goes the other way, too.
Just another random fact about video games. I remember reading that the Lion King video game, this goes way back, was so difficult.
Super hard.
I think even the people who created it couldn't beat it.
because they want to make money on the movie, which it makes sense because people are into the movie. They want to play the video game, but I just think they don't think it through enough to their audience and they're not trying to make a good product. There's actually one of the most infamous ones that's good is DuckTales, which is based on the TV show. Yeah. That game was supposed to be really good. That was for the regular Nintendo.
For the original DuckTales? Yeah. Or DuckTales reboot?
No, the original. That's considered a good game.
Well, back to reviews really quickly. This is going to be my episodic plug for Common Sense Media. The best website in the world, aside from the libraries, of course, offers reviews and ratings with specifics for parents about what the game includes. Kind of what Brian said. The other review sites include, you know, this has violence, this has bad language. They'll break it down even to like what bad language it is and things like that. So
yeah, like direct quotes. Yeah.
They tell it like it is, that website. I've seen it. I've used it in the past when I was picking video games. Yeah. Definitely, they tell you the content.
My children hate when I pull that website up. I'm like, hold on one second. And I look it up. They're like, oh. We're not getting this game.
Jessie's just setting herself up for a post-library career for Common Sense Media.
This podcast will just be my resume.
Well, let me ask you both. What kind of games do your kids like to play?
So I'll go first because mine will be short and sweet.
And what do you like to play? And then I'll tell you what I like to play.
So I'm not a huge video game person, but we do now have a Switch and we'll play Mario Kart as a family, which is super fun. My oldest likes to play Kirby, she likes.
Yeah, Kirby's fun.
And then there's some little gator man guy she likes to play. And Mario Party. That's it. We're just dipping our toe in here.
I grew up with Zelda. That's like mommy's alone time. Like, leave me alone with my solo quest games. But as a family, we do like Mario Party and Mario Kart, Just Dance. Smash Brothers, things like that. It's nice when you have family that live in other states and you can all kind of, everybody can game together. That's really cute. My daughter loves the FNAF games. She's obsessed with those. Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh my gosh. Aren't they scary?
So, I played them all first, so I knew what to expect. I knew she could handle it, but she likes those. And then Minecraft and Roblox.
Oh yeah. We'll get to those. I think to your point, what you said is like so important. Like, we can tell you all the review sites, everything, but really it comes down to knowing your kid.
You have to sit down and do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And playing the game and seeing it with your own eyes and you know, really spending that time. Because Five Nights at Freddy's, just like the dolls that exist in the stores or whatever, scare my kids. So like, you know, even if it said that my 8-year-old could play it, she wouldn't play it.
There's also a ton of social media around a lot of these games where you can watch, even if you're not a gamer, like my husband's not a video gamer. So he'll watch videos of people playing the games.
So he
can see the content and he can hear people talking about what they like, what they don't like. So even if you're not a gamer and you really don't want to spend time testing these games, there's a million game podcasts and videos that you can watch or listen to where you can get
a really good sense of what it is.
I mean, he plays Minecraft with her and the two of them get a kick out of Roblox. But Roblox, we kind of just leave on, like, we watch her play that because of all the things that come with Roblox.
Sure.
So we're not really playing it, but we're kind of, yeah.
Yeah, you got your
we're
eye.
There. Yeah.
What about you, Brian?
I grew up playing a lot of Mario games. I played a lot of those, Mario Kart. And I really love role-playing games, which is like the Japanese one specifically, JRPGs is Japanese role-playing games, and like Final Fantasy. I'm sure you've heard of Final Fantasy.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I like them and I think these are good for kids because they have a lot of reading and a lot of text. So I spent a lot of time reading the text and now they read to you and the characters are voice acted. But back in the day, you had to read everything yourself. There was no acting and no audio. audio. So I did a lot of reading, and I used to actually read with my sister almost like a play, and we would read out the different parts. So I like those kind of games a lot. I'm actually playing a game right now, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is like a remake of the Final Fantasy VII game from like the early 2000s. And I'm currently at 68 hours in the game. It's very long. I tried to think about how much time I actually spent. It's like I played like two or three entire full days of my life just playing this game. Over time, though.
I try not judgment. To look at that because it's embarrassing.
I just admire the attention spans. Like, I'm having a hard time focusing on anything for that long of a time. So good for you guys. Nice to have hobbies.
Oh, I was going to echo on one of your points earlier, Aaron. I was going to tell you that if you're interested in looking at reviews and you don't want to read them, if you go on YouTube and you type in the name of a video game and the word review after it, you'll find 10, 15, 20 different video reviews, and you'll be able to see the gameplay, and you'll be able to see what the game, you know, like how the game looks, you know, on the screen.
I know for myself that when my daughter started asking for a Switch, I was really against it. Even though I played video games as a kid, I was against it because I just didn't know enough about it. So I know a lot of parents out there are probably also nervous to introduce video games. So are we nervous for a reason? Are we overreacting? Like, what do video games do for kids' social lives, you know, their eyesight, their brain development, all the things? Is it okay?
I mean, I could say from my own personal experience that I think a limit should definitely be set on how much time a kid plays games. When I was younger, my parents were pretty strict. They would, especially when I was doing bad in school, they didn't want me to play video games. So they would be like, you can study for an hour and then you could play games for an hour. So I had to spend time doing my homework and studies and I could play. So I think setting time limits is important because I don't think it's good for anyone to stare at a screen for that many hours. I think that breaks should be encouraged. I also remember on the other hand, when I was older, literally spending 8 to 10 hours on the laying on my bedroom floor with my brother watching me playing the video game, which is not healthy.
Right.
I was older then, but I do remember that. I was probably about 17, maybe 18. So it goes from one extreme to another. I think that it's hard to have your kids not play video games because mm-hmm. their classmates are all playing them. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't want to buy a system, if they have friends, they're most likely going to be exposed to them.
I feel like that's something that's hard for modern parents. Well, for I'll speak for myself. I'm not going to speak for everyone, but to wrap your head around is like, because when we were growing up, we're all around roughly the same age. If you played video games, you were kind of seen as like a loner, right? Like you sat in your room. No offense, Brian. I know you just told us that story, but you were with your brother. It's fine. But that it really had a negative connotation that you were playing video games and you were not going outside and all these things. But now it really is so social that it's your kid hanging out, especially since COVID. I feel like a lot of kids have mm-hmm. figured out that that's a great way to connect. You know, they don't have to deal with getting a ride or
you don't
busy.
Have to worry about hosting like 7 kids at your house right. every night yeah. when you just
that's a plus.
It's for sure.
Let me ask you
it has its benefits.
As parents, how do you feel about kids playing games virtually versus in person in the same room? Because is it really socializing if they're playing in separate house?
And is it depends on the game. It depends on the type of game. I do think it has a really high degree of social interaction because they are talking to each other. They can see each other. They use their cameras,
right.
you know, and they're all kind of interacting virtually in the same world. I think it just depends on the game and what kind of experience they're looking for.
I guess to Brian's point, is it considered, I don't know.
I can't even speak on this because I honestly don't the know. Other.
So in doing research about this, for this episode, because I know so little about video games, to Brian's point, limits, all the experts say that limits are important, but it's only half the battle is limiting the time. It's making sure that the other time is spent going outside, being social in a person-to-person way, reading. And as long as you have the balance of those things, it's not that it's just you're setting the time limit for an hour a day, but then they're still not getting those other things. Like, you really have to make sure that their plate is filled with healthy food, which is easier said than done. And that, you know, some of the research was also saying that gaming now has more positive effects than anybody had thought. There's cognitive benefits. Video gamers outperform non-gamers in terms of attention, working memory, mental flexibility.
When I was a kid, edutainment was a thing. And nowadays, I feel like the educational aspects of games are more embedded into the actual gameplay than they used to be. It used to be...
You have dysentery.
Mario teaches typing or Mario's time machine. Have you
yes. No, but I know what you mean by saying that. Like, it was the focus was education. Now it's a little bit more sly.
Yeah, the entire game of like the Mario's Time Machine was about learning about history, and it was like a regular game, except you couldn't actually get killed or get attacked in the game. It was just basically you run around, the enemies didn't hurt you, and you were solving all these like kind of like problem solving things to learn about different parts of the past. And the Carmen San Diego games
oh,
were
yeah.
history too.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel like there's still education in the games, but I think it's just a little more difficult to find
right.
from the naked eye. You have to kind of look more deeply.
I think what you said is right. I think it's come a long way, especially in the development of the games, but also in society's perception of the games. Yeah, I just don't think it's, I think parents are more willing to let their kids.
I think it's more the online factor that scares people. I don't know if the home game things are threatening if you're just playing with your family and friends in the room.
Unless you're playing too much. And then I think parents worry, even if you are playing at home and it's safe and it's not online, I think if you're playing too much, that can be problematic, like Brian said. One sign that I read about is that there's an issue with your kid and maybe video game addiction would be if it's not easy to take them away from their game. So we were talking about this earlier, but like with my kids and their tablets, when I started noticing that when I would try and take the tablet, they would have this huge emotional reaction, that kind of clued me in that there was a problem. So if you're trying to find this balance and you think that you are, but then you're noticing that your kid is having a really hard time letting these things go, I say they turn into Gollum from Lord of the Rings, then that might be time to like reevaluate how much time they're actually spending with video games.
But well, some games, they have built-in difficulty levels, so you can adjust the difficulty if someone's having trouble in a game. A lot of the games I have difficulty, the RPGs, because some of them are like, you can make them really hard, you can make them really easy if you just want to enjoy the game. And it's supposed to be, like you said, Jesse, it's supposed to be fun. At the end of the day, a video game is supposed to be something you enjoy doing.
I guess that's something to pay attention to, right? It's kind of like, what do they call it online? It's like rage bait. If you're playing this video game and you're leaving every single time from this game in a rage, or you're frustrated or mad, like, I think this is a good opportunity to point this out to your kid. Like, every time you turn that game off, you're in a real foul mood. Why do we think that is? Like, maybe we should take a break.
Try a different game, something more fun.
Right, try something else. And I guess that's just to the point, just have to stay involved. Like, when it comes to picking out the games, watching the YouTube videos, and then paying attention to your kid when they're done playing or while they're playing, and just asking questions. A lot of work, guys, but we can do it. I agree.
What else you got for us, Brian?
I could talk a little bit about what the library has to offer in terms of gaming. So besides our collection, and we have all the major current platforms, we even have some older games. We have some Wii games still, and Wii U. Not many, though, because they're not being made. But we also have on the regular, we have our Twitch stream, which is every Wednesday.
Can you explain for people who don't know what Twitch is, what that is?
So Twitch is people playing video games, and you get to watch them play. And they'll talk about, like in our example, our staff members, I was on the Twitch stream, we talk about a specific topic, video game related, and you watch the people playing a game.
Okay. So they have those videos on YouTube, but this is like live.
This is live. You can watch them after the fact, usually, but this is like a live stream, and ours occurs every Wednesday.
Is the content more for teenagers to
watch?
It's
all ages. Okay. It's family friendly. So your family can watch it.
Do you play along and interact with library staff?
People can ask questions. It's like, there's a chat. I personally, this is going to sound awful because I'm promoting a Twitch stream, I never was a fan of watching people play games, but I do find it to be useful if I'm stuck in a game to watch someone's playing a specific part to see how to get past it. That's something for your parents as well. If your kid is stuck in a part, go on YouTube, type in the name of the game, try to type in the level, and there'll be a video of someone playing through it if you need a hint. I do that all the time. Some people enjoy it. Some people don't. I'm one of those people where I'm someone who likes to play. I don't like to watch. So we do have the Twitch stream, and we also have monthly video game tournaments. I know the children's department has some for tweens, and the teen department has monthly video game mystery tournament. So it's a mystery game. It's usually a retro game, not always. And we have the subscription to the Nintendo, the service where you get old games from like Nintendo 64.
I love that.
So we are always open to new ideas for programs too, though. So if anyone has any suggestions, just, you know, email us and we'll consider doing them.
Yeah, the tween program that Brian just mentioned is we offer a Minecraft club. Is that what you're talking about? The Minecraft program?
No, this is
separate. Is like kids playing. I had the opportunity to watch. I was covering at Carnegie one night, and those kids just were having like the most amazing time.
Cool.
I think it was, they had a Smash Brothers one, and then they had another one that was, I don't think it was an online game, but yeah, they had like a crazy awesome time. I was like, wow, this was not the library of my childhood, but it was awesome.
I've been here for almost 20 years, and the only game that has everlasting staying power is Smash Brothers. It's gone over system to system to system, and it's never died in popularity. The kids always love it, and that is a very family-friendly game. It's a fighting game, but there's zero blood.
Cool.
Cartoon it's violence so has characters from all different franchises. In addition to the Mario characters, there's characters from like Sonic the Hedgehog is in it, and the kids love it. Very, very popular.
Maybe that'll be the next one for my house. Like a family game. But yes, in addition to that, we do also have the Minecraft Club. We offer it once a month. I think it's grades 3 to 6. But if you're looking to get your kid out and about and they love video games, it's a great place for them to come and be together and to play in the library in a safe space.
What else do we offer here for video games?
Oh, we do. We were saying, just so parents know, as far as Roblox goes in the building here at the library, we don't limit kids from playing Roblox. They are able to access it on our computers here, but we're not going to help kids create accounts. So I just feel like that needs to be said. So if your child wants to play Roblox at the library, they're more than welcome to, but they just need an account with your permission. We're not really comfortable making Roblox accounts for children.
Yeah, you got to watch. That's definitely one of those ones that you have to watch.
So should we get into a little bit quickly Roblox and Minecraft? Because I feel like, especially for younger kids, those are the most important games.
Well, I am by no means an expert on Roblox, but it is a constant topic of conversation in my house. I don't know if either of you have experience with Roblox, but my daughter and her friends are completely obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
They're like 10, 11, and 12. It literally is one of the most popular games. Just doing some research into the platform itself, there's like 80 million daily users. If you don't know what it is, players can create and publish their own games, which is cool. You know, it's teaching kids coding skills, but, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of users that build games with adult or inappropriate content kind of hidden in there that you might not notice at first that your child might get to eventually, which is why I really try to make an effort to go through the game beforehand. Sometimes I don't have that opportunity, so I'll have to look it up online, or we'll just make her like screenshot it so we can all kind of watch it like on the TV or something, so that she, screen share it so mm-hmm. that we can all go through it together. But again, sometimes you have to have those uncomfortable conversations. You have to be prepared to make sure that your child knows how to report inappropriate content when you come across it, or if you come across it, how to get out of uncomfortable situations, and just how to choose appropriate games. So we have, you know, we have some rules with it. She's only allowed to play with people that she knows in real life. Sometimes that's hard because if you're in a certain game, I guess there's other people that can join the server or whatever. But then in those circumstances, we'll limit the conversation that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of settings that automatically come into play if you create an account for your child for 13 and under, but you still have to be really careful about checking those settings to make sure that your kid's not turning anything on and off or mm-hmm. creating additional accounts. Once they see how you set up an account, I'm sure they're going to want to create like 50 of them that you're not aware of, but you really just have to pay attention to their device. You have to look at the game history to see what they're playing. It's a lot of work, but they're all playing it, and right. no kid wants to be left out. And some of it is really fun and really funny.
I feel like any game, because Minecraft is the same, they both have like social content to them. You know, like their kids are able to interact with other people. They can interact with strangers. Mm-hmm. They can interact with friends. I think Minecraft, you can play solo. But so anytime it's that aspect gets involved, it is going to be more work because
yeah,
you're
you
dealing
can,
kind
you
of
can
an
play
unknown.
Solo, I think, on
in Roblox too.
Yeah, you definitely can play on your own.
So just as far as like, because my, even though I said my daughter played Minecraft once and didn't really care, now she just watches it. But we have had many conversations about Roblox. So just in looking it up and trying to figure it out, it looks like Minecraft might be better for a little bit younger, and Roblox is better for more around like your daughter's age, mm-hmm. you know, like 10. And so my daughter's only 8 at this point. So
yeah,
we're
she
not...
started with Minecraft.
Right. That's what it seems to be. It seems mm-hmm. to be like Minecraft is,
Minecraft
like the,
is the gateway
drug. Yeah.
I like Minecraft better.
Yeah.
I feel like Minecraft has a different vibe to
mm-hmm.
it. Again, they're both games you just really have to be on top of.
So one of the things that I just learned about Roblox just from doing my job here is people who are in the world can monetize their world. So they're actually creating, I guess, like part of the game that they can then sell for real world money. So that kind of brings up another whole host of conversations that you would need to have with your kid about, first of all, you don't want them spending your money on Roblox, real money, not the Robux.
You can earn Robux in the game.
Right.
You do every 5 minutes, these kids are asking for Robux gift cards.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make sure that what you're spending this money on, you know, if they want like game add-ons or privileges or certain things, like I can understand paying for certain things in the game.
Right. This just bums me out a little bit. Like I know we're supposed to be pro video game here, but like that is, I don't.
It's very common in video games nowadays, especially the games you play on your mobile phone.
Yeah, right.
I used to play a game, Disney Magic Kingdoms. Have you heard of it?
Mm-mm.
It was a game where you get to build your own Disney theme park. So I loved it. But
cool.
There was a bunch of free content, and then there were certain characters you could only get unless you spend money on.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Everything's monetized. I think that's what really bums me out.
Yeah, like, all these expansion packs,
so like,
yes. upgrades.
They would have like an Aladdin expansion. You can get Aladdin, Jasmine, and you know, Abu. But then if you wanted the genie, you had to buy him with the in-game currency.
Right.
And like you said, you could earn the in-game currency, but it's very, very few and far between. Mm-hmm. And most of the time you have to spend your own money. I think I actually spend money, my own money, which is not smart, on Mrs. Potts. I wanted Mrs. Potts in my park. And guess what? I don't have the game anymore on my phone.
Yeah. or the money.
That's what it is. You invest so much in these games and then it's very stressful and aggravating, especially with some of these like digital gift cards.
Yeah.
They all want the upgrades, outfits and characters and like, places
thing,
that you
it's
can
like,
play. But
what
yeah,
is that
they're heavily, they are heavily monetized.
I don't know. I just don't like that. Like, I got to keep up with the Roblox Joneses. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true.
It's Fortnite, already
the Fortnite skins are like the bane of my existence.
These are all games that are supposedly free.
Exactly.
But they're not free. So when you see something, parents, when you see something that says it's free, it's usually too good to be
never
true.
Free. I had an economics teacher in high school tell us, ain't no such thing as a free lunch. And he's right.
Yeah, I mean, the games are really fun and some of the expansion packs are really cool and stuff. Again, it's about setting limits. Like, how much financially do you want to invest in this game? Mm-hmm. Is it something that you're going to use for a long time? Like, it's a needs and wants
conversation. Listen to our financial literacy podcast.
Is it an appropriate use of money? But also, are you leaving yourself open to get hacked or scammed or, you know, taken advantage of? So it's a good conversation starter, a lot of these things. You know, sometimes it adds to the gaming experience and it's fun.
Yeah.
And other times it's just a complete waste.
Or other times your kid is just hitting buy, and $125 later.
Yeah. Well, that's why you got to check those settings.
Exactly.
To make sure that they can't just purchase anything without your
She'll never do that
approval.
Again. Tell you what.
Yeah.
No, it just adds up real quick.
But it's a lot, you know, it's a lot of work. So it can be worth it if it makes your kid really happy and if they are getting benefits like coding skills or, you know, whatever it is that they're getting out of it, even if it's just stress, you know, stress relieving or having fun with your friends. So weighing benefits and pros and cons.
That's right. And like all things, communicating with your kid will make it easier to figure these things out.
True.
All right. Anything else for us, Brian, about video games?
I could recommend a few quick games
that
I would say mostly for Switch. The new Super Mario Wonder game is excellent. Very family friendly. Lots of interesting puzzles and hidden objects in the game. I really enjoyed that one. And Mario Kart, of course, is good. Mario Party. For older teens, not for kids, I would say anyone over 15 Jackbox games are fun. Have any of you played Jackbox games?
No.
No, what is it?
They're like games that you could play on your TV. They have them for Switch, they have them for PC, and they're like interactive party games that you use on your phone. So everyone looks at the screen and they play on their phones, and there's trivia. There's a lot of them are not for children though. But it's a good party game for if you have some older teens. I would say 15, 16 is probably okay.
My kid does something like this in
school. So is it an app that everybody has to use on their phone, or is it through a gaming system?
You can just go on a website. You don't have to download an app. And I'm also going to talk very quickly about Kahoot.
Yeah.
Kahoot, we use it all the time at the library, not just for staff, but also for the public. And the kids use it in school. It's a great way to do trivia with your phones. You don't need to download anything. You go to a website and you can answer questions using a phone, multiple choice questions. A lot of fun.
Yeah, Kahoot is fun.
I love it when we do it here at work.
Me too.
It's like my favorite thing.
I know. It's timed, so there's like a lot of stress and pressure in a good way. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know. There's so much to talk about and then...
I know.
But we are here if you have questions or just need to vent about what's going on in your house gaming wise.
Or if you
need help researching a game, if you want us to buy some games, we're here.
That's right. Thank you again to Brian for joining us. If you want to hear more from Brian, make sure to check out our podcast all about family gaming with board games. If you liked our podcast today, please let your friends and family know. And us, we would love to hear from you with your thoughts on upcoming topics or just general feedback. You can email us at podcast@pmlib.org.
You can also visit us at our website, adventuresinparentingpml.com. Podbean.com. And on that website, you can find tons of resource guides, guide for today's episode and all our previous episodes, just in case you need a reminder of a website or you want to dig a little deeper into any of our covered topics.
You can also find our podcast on most podcast platforms. So Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. So like and subscribe, right? That's what the kids say.
There you go. That's what they say.
All right. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks again. Special thanks to Soundstripe.com and Avocado Junkie for providing the music used in this podcast. Soundstripe has the perfect music for your project. Visit Soundstripe.com today for the best in royalty-free music.